This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and we're privileged now to be joined by best-selling author, longtime journalist Michael Wolff. He made huge waves with his number one best-selling bombshell book, Fire and Fury, and now he takes us back inside the Trump presidency to reveal a White House in turmoil. No real surprise here. The book is Siege, Trump Under Fire, and good morning to you, Michael Wolff.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and before we get to your latest work, you had a long history with the president. You probably, as journalists go, know him about as well or better than any other. How far back do you go?
Well, certainly back to New York in the 90s. I was at New York Magazine. I was a columnist there, and I was one of the people he used to call up to complain about what was written about him, or more often than not, what was not written about him, articles that he wanted to be in, that he wanted to be quoted in. So we had a, an on-again, off-again, totally, good, amusing relationship. I kind of liked him, sort of. He was Donald Trump. I mean, he used to get off the phone with him and used to say to people, that was Trump.
Yeah, he's full of energy and full of opinions, and he's certainly a charismatic individual. And unlike other journalists, when he would call them and use the name John Miller or John Barron, when he called you, he said, I'm Donald Trump, right?
He was always Donald Trump, yes. Sometimes the Donald. This is the Donald.
He would say, this is the Donald.
Oh, yes. or the Trumpster. So it was almost as if he had a sense of awareness about who he was. I mean, you could never quite tell. Was he aware that this was all an act? Was he not aware?
Well, I do think he has a sense of humor. He doesn't show it very often, but apparently you got to see it and hear it a few times. And the first book, you got incredible access. He was very pleased that you were writing a book at the start, wasn't he?
Very well, it was funny. In the beginning, I went to him and I said, I'd like to come into the White House as an observer. And in fact, he thought I was I was asking for a job. I don't know, deputy assistant observer, I suppose. And I said, no, I want to come in and I want to write a book. And he kind of said, oh, okay. I mean, he wasn't very interested in the idea of a book. But it was like, okay, sure. If that's what you want, no problem.
Well, you did get access that no one else has. And in fact, I didn't even know he had a house in Los Angeles. I knew he stayed at the Beverly Hills Hotel with one Stormy Daniels.
Totally an odd thing. The Stormy Daniels thing was at the Beverly Hills Hotel, which is literally right across the street from the house he owns. So why, I can't figure out what he was doing at the Beverly Hills Hotel rather than in his own house.
Under the name David Dennison. But,
exactly.
That's a high rent neighborhood. You got in the house. That's where you met him. I'm sure it was a very nice house, or it is a nice house.
It actually, I mean, it's a fine house, but it felt like a house filled with a lot of cast-off hotel lobby furniture.
Michael Wolff is the guest, and he is a guy who got a firsthand look at the president, has known him for years, said the president used to call him and say, this is the Donald, this is the Trumpster. Mike got a number one bestseller out of his relationship and his fine reporting in Fire and Fury. And he didn't like the book very much when it came out. Did that sever your relationship with him?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, all relationships with Trump are ultimately severed. I mean, nobody has, except a handful of the most obsequious people. Otherwise, everybody's relationship becomes severed. They sour on him, he sours on them. So it was a sort of a natural moment. I wrote the book, which I would not say is entirely negative. It's a pretty clear picture of what was going on inside the White House. But he went off the deep end about it, threatened to sue me, threatened to try to stop the publication of the book, et cetera, et cetera. But I was just one of the rest of the White House, in effect, that was kind of cast into exile. So the first wave of people who populated the White House, Reince Priebus, Steve Bannon, that whole group, they were washed out within 7 or 8 months. And then the second group that came in was washed out. So, for the second book, my new book, Siege, it actually, although I was no longer in the White House, it rather felt the same as the first book because I found myself talking to everybody else who had been banished from the White House.
The name is Michael Wolff with two F's, and the book is Siege, following up the number one, overwhelming number one bestseller, Fire and Fury. And 877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org. A couple of inquiries from listeners. This is one regarding Mick Mulvaney, his chief of staff, who was derided on tape in that interview with George Stephanopoulos. Trump threw him out of his office for coughing. Is that the way he treats people?
Oh, it treats everybody. He's a bad boss. He's an abusive boss. He extends nobody an ounce of sympathy or courtesy. Yes. And the interesting thing about Mick Mulvaney is that he agreed to take the job of chief of staff only if he could be called the acting. Because he knew that he had to be in a position to bolt at any moment.
Well, Steve Bannon is a person that you've become quite familiar with, and he is a big source in this book. And you say that despite the fact that he got Trumpian treatment and is no longer in the inner sanctum, he's still playing a role. What is Bannon doing?
You know, I think these two guys, and it's really part of the book is about this kind of confounding relationship between Bannon and Trump, in which they love each other, they hate each other, they're repulsed by each other, they're attracted by each other, they try to escape each other, but they can't get away from each other. Donald Trump is the president of the United States because Steve Bannon came to run the campaign in August 2016. Steve Bannon is now a significant voice in the world because of Donald Trump. So these guys are kind of wedded to each other in one of the really, truly horrible political marriages of all time.
What is it that attracts each to the other? I think I know why Bannon's attracted to him.
Yeah, I mean, they they need each other. Trump can't get out of his own way. Trump can't get elected on his own, and I don't think he'll be reelected in 2020. I don't think he'll be reelected, but the only chance he has is to bring Bannon back into the campaign, a subject, by the way, of constant discussion. And for Bannon, it's, he becomes Steve Bannon because of Donald Trump. I mean, remember, he was a completely marginal figure before this. He goes into the White House as the second most powerful person there without any formal political experience at all. Equally, Donald Trump has no formal political experience. These guys made each other at this strange moment in time.
Now, in Louisiana and in other states, a lot of social conservatives, they really like Mike Pence, and that's one of the reasons why they like the president. But you say that Trump really doesn't care for Pence. He tolerates him, finds him annoying. What about him does he not like?
You know, I mean, first thing, Trump says he calls Pence a religious nut. He doesn't like the fact that he's incredibly, that he's a kind of a public suck up. I mean, this is a strange Trump thing. He demands that you suck up to him, and then when you do suck up to him, he kicks you for it. I wouldn't say it is exactly Mike Pence's fault that the president doesn't like him, because the president comes to dislike everyone. And so he's suspicious about Pence because because he thinks Pence is waiting for him to fall and falter, and Pence can step in. But it's not even that so much as the fact that Pence is omnipresent and Trump comes to dislike everybody who tries to get near him.
Now, Melania Trump and their son Barron, they've largely been treated with mercy by the media, but you it's a fascinating story, this marriage of this couple, 24 years in age different, third marriage for Trump. What about Melania?
Well, you know, everybody in the White House kind of regards this marriage as a Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes thing. You know, an arrangement has been made. She does not live in the White House. She literally, she got her parents a house in Maryland, and that's where she spends most of her time with her parents and with her son, who goes to school in Maryland. So this is all a kind of illusion that's maintained because the press doesn't like to deal with the family matters because there's a young child involved. But it's sort of, I think it's important because it says something again about Donald Trump.
All right, we're going to take a very short break, then return and spend a few more minutes with Michael Wolff, a fascinating book, Siege, providing what is called an alarming portrait of a president like we've never seen before, followed up from the bestseller, number one bestseller, Fire and Fury. 877-217-5757, back in 2 minutes. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Matt Doyle producing, and in a few minutes we'll hear from another fine author, Roger Johns, but we're finishing up with Michael Wolff, the author of Fire and Fury and Siege, his latest book. He's been a regular columnist for Vanity Fair, New York, The Hollywood Reporter, British GQ. Lives in Manhattan with four children and has known Donald Trump for several decades, and that relationship has now been severed because of Fire and Fury. But in this book, Michael Wolff goes into depth about some of the relationships Trump has with people who are, of course, household names in their own right. And in our remaining time, Mitch McConnell, what kind of relationship do they have, Michael?
And they have a relationship wholly of convenience because they each hate each other and they each make fun. They each imitate each other. I think McConnell would certainly put the shiv into Trump given the least opportunity, and Trump would do likewise to Mitch. But to some degree, they are stuck with each other until one can kill the other. I think it's from McConnell's standpoint, it is very strictly, you don't try to kill the king until you're sure that you can kill the king.
And, of course, McConnell's wife is a cabinet secretary, too, so he is
benefiting. Together they do this routine of imitating Trump in a highly derisive fashion. This is part of a whole pattern that literally anybody who has spent any time with Trump, anybody who has worked with Trump, comes to loathe him.
Rudy Giuliani, what's going on with this relationship in the president?
Totally fascinating. It's Trump who goes around and says Rudy's a drunk and Rudy's losing it and Rudy's crazy. But at the same time, curiously, Rudy's odd television defense of the president has kind of worked for Trump. Rudy was one of the people to get under the skin of the Mueller people. I think from the Mueller people, they just came to see this as something so wildly unpredictable that they decided to be cautious. And Rudy in his own way as crazy as Trump, was a important agent of that.
Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, who lives a stone's throw from President Obama, he is a major player, but how much is he a major player in the White House?
I think he is the major player. I mean, he's the guy who, he's the last man standing. Everybody else has been washed out of that White House, except Jared Kushner. He was there from the beginning, an important voice from the beginning. He still remains an important voice. He's an important voice because he's married to the president's daughter. But nevertheless, he is still there, still the man to see.
Tracy at the Capitol asks about the president's finances. You go into detail about this in the book, and he is afraid of his financial dealings being revealed, according to you. Why?
Well, because he's a crook. This is it's one of those kind of great stories which everybody in New York knows. You know, he's a C-level real estate guy who has depended on and when you're in the real estate business and you're not a blue chip player, you have to get your financings in any way that you can. Does that frequently involve dealing with incredibly dubious people? Yes, absolutely. Does it frequently involve, at least on the border, treading the borderline of money laundering, or in fact, often going over the line? Absolutely. And Trump has been doing this for 40 years of questionable dealings in and out of bankruptcy. It doesn't take a genius to know some of the reasons that he is so protective of his taxes.
All right, and finally, another listener notes that in your previous book, you kind of implied the president might be in the stage of some kind of cognizant deficit disorder, what would be called early stage dementia. Is that fair?
You know, I can't. I'm not a doctor. I can't say. I have no idea. I do know that, and have witnessed firsthand, and have heard the reports of everyone around him who has witnessed firsthand, that he repeats himself on a constant basis. And he repeats himself more and more. So, you know, a lot of people observed, well, you know, and he would, in a 30-minute conversation, he would repeat himself three times. But then that got to be, in a 10-minute conversation, he would repeat himself twice. Let me just put it this way. When you are around him, it is a disconcerting experience.
Michael Wolff, congratulations on another bestseller, and certainly a provocative book, A Man Who Knows the President Well. And, of course, you can tell they have split the sheets, but it is an interesting read with unusual access. This time, Steve Bannon spills out to his heart and to Michael Wolff, and it is all detailed in Siege, Trump Under Fire. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Michael Wolff.
Thank you.